Season 6, Episode 12, What's Up, Chuck? It opens up with Russell, Kirkendall, Medavoy, and Martinez, who have a DOA in an alley. The DOA was a male, 25, white dude, shot in the head. And a gentleman who was a witness to watch to seeing the body get dumped. His name's like Eric Horsted. I wrote his name really small. I did want to point out that is a slight famous face. It's played by Michael Hitchcock. He's in a bunch of comedies. And once I saw him, I knew I had seen him before, but I could not remember the specifics of what he was in.
I can tell you what he's in. He is in all of those Christopher...
Guest movies.
Christopher Guest movies. He's in all of... he's in A Mighty Wind, Best in Show, all of those movies. He's fucking great. He's also in other comedies, but that's what I know him for the most. What he's famous to me for is all those movies.
This Herrick, either Herschel or Hursted, I don't know. I wrote it too fast. He talks to Medavoy and Martinez because Russell and Kirkendall get pulled away because a family show up to the crime scene and just say their daughter is missing. Is that standard protocol? That they could just pull detectives off of other things? Like, hey, I got a missing daughter, so stop what you're doing.
I didn't even think about that. I just was watching it, and when a cop showed up and was like, oh, these people are missing their daughter, I just rolled with it. I don't know why.
Yeah, I was sitting there like, yeah, go fill out a report. Like, we don't take this kind of shit on the street. Like, you gotta talk to somebody else. It's not, like, we got a dead body here.
Nah, but this is also New York, and from what I learned is people are gonna talk to you whether you like it or not. So, if there's a commotion happening and they've got something going on, they're definitely gonna try to tie it into that. So, yeah, I could see that happening in a weird way.
I see you got a dead body over there. By the way, my daughter's missing. The DOA, they get his ID. It's a Frank Leary. It doesn't look like a robbery. The family lets Kirkendall and Russell know that Tanya is missing. They have like a weird work schedule, and they just realize they haven't seen her in a couple days. And the person who would see her is AJ, played by Terrence Howard from, well, I believe, Hustle and Flow and Power and the original Rhodey from Iron Man until he wanted too much money.
Yeah, didn't he want more than fucking RDJ or like about the same?
I don't know the specifics, but I have a feeling it wouldn't surprise me if they just didn't get along with him and they've like permeated that rumor so it sounds like he's the bad guy. But I have a feeling him and RDJ didn't get along.
But if I remember correctly, he had some weird shit go on. Happened on Twitter or Instagram or an Instagram Live or something with his wife. After Hustle and Flow, he had a few years there where some shit was like weird. So I don't know who to trust on that one.
Anyway, he's playing a dude. I wrote, is he special? Is he clearly special? Like, is that the point they're trying to make?
100%.
Okay.
They talked about him getting a disability check.
Mm-hmm.
So this made me wonder, like, is it the accident that made him special?
Or is he special and got into an accident?
Yeah, or did, like, something happen? Didn't he say, I mean, I'm jumping ahead a little bit. At one point, didn't he say he takes drugs?
He does. He mentions that he has, like, anti-seizure meds later.
Yeah. Okay, so that has nothing to do. It's not like Oxycontin or, like, back pills or anything like that.
So he's clearly, like, slow-ish, but they also treat him like shit right away. It's like, all he does is watch TV and wait for his chick. And it's like, okay, well, you know, I mean, he didn't have to be out here if you're going to be that mean.
So, like, I've seen this episode a lot, but every time I watch it, I always sympathize with him a little bit.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, like, why does he have to sit at home and wait for a check? Like, what happened? Like, what's the story there? Like, why are you guys always yelling at him, too? Like, are you just jealous because he's making money? But then you come to find out that he doesn't get a check. Well, we'll get there. But, like, he's still waiting on the settlement to, like,
for him
to win the settlement, right?
Yeah.
So, like, he's not getting a check. So, like, why are you guys mad at him?
Well,
like,
I also
should be mad at him because he's not fucking working.
I'll be honest. I'm mad at him at the end of this episode for a completely different reason, which we'll touch on later.
You're mad at him or mad at them?
Mad at him. Well, mad at both.
Oh,
I'm at it all.
I think we're gonna have an argument at the end of this, so that should be fun.
Okay, that's. I mean, I'm prepared for it.
If he is this, if he is special slash slow slash, I don't know the proper thing to say, so don't get mad.
Mental disabilities.
Yeah, if he is, then there's no way you can be upset with him.
But
because he doesn't have the mental capacity, there's no way. Anyways, we'll get there.
We'll get there. I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what worries me when we get there.
We'll get there.
Essentially, they say the family.
I feel like we should just fight about it now.
Well, no. Let's get through the intro to the episode.
Dude. Because this is a weird intro.
So they talk to the family. And they say Tanya's missing. They're like, we're asking her friends in her usual places. And they say, as soon as you get done asking all of those people, come back to the station house. They cut back to Medavoy and Martinez, who are talking to the witness, who's kind of a fucking weirdo. Because he's like, I hear shots. I go to look for it. Isn't that crazy? And
dude, he was fucking great.
And then he's like, oh, I saw the van speed by, and it was a livery. And it had a number on the side. And Martinez is like, did you get the number? He's like, why would I? I don't need a ride.
Fucking great.
Like, it's so ridiculous.
But this opening, it's funny because you have this dude and then you have Terrence Howard, right?
Yeah.
And this opening, I feel like, shows you, I mean, minus the main characters, but what two good actors are. Even, like, the people that Terrence Howard is acting off of, they're not great, but he still is something. And he's, like, really good at it.
Yeah,
my opinion for both. And then that other guy, I thought he, like, created this, like, fucking weird character and just, like, brought it. And it was, I love that guy.
And after they get done with him, they give him a card saying, if you remember anything else, give us a call. And as they walk away, Medavoy and Martinez, as they walk away at least, I think Martinez is the one that's like, I wonder what happened to Danny and Andy. And then it cuts to Sipowitz and Sorensen, who are stuck on the street because two cars parked too close to them, and one of the cars is broken down.
Right.
And Andy is fucking pissed. Like, Andy is already done with the day. He calls the dude, he's like, this guy's batteries is as dead as his brain. And as they're, like, as he's getting angry with him, he sees a dude who he recognizes in a wheelchair. And for half a second, I was like, is he going to beat up a dude in a wheelchair just because of this? Essentially, Andy grabs this guy and says, an amputee scam is one thing, but don't call yourself a vet. And then lifts the dude up after taking his fake leg, revealing that the dude's a liar about having a fake leg. And takes his prosthesis. And the guy's like, can I at least get that back? He's like, yeah, when you come by the station house without a leg, I'll give it to you. And then a dude on the steps with, like, a moving dolly sees him. And so I had to write this down. Keep staring instead of moving your truck, and you'll be wearing this for an earring. And Sorensen said, it's going to be one of them kind of days. And Sipowitz throws him the foot, and we begin the episode.
Three things, I guess. After Sipowitz looks at the moving truck guy, or the guy with the dolly, or whatever he's doing, and he yells that at him, the moving truck guy just kind of, like, gives him this saw, like, what, that's Sipowitz, and, like, shakes his head type thing, which I found kind of funny.
That's old Sippy.
So the first time I ever watched this, that scene made me laugh like crazy, and then I had someone do that in real life with me around, and it's not so funny. So
wait, like, lift up a dude who was faking?
Confronted a homeless person who was saying that they were a vet and couldn't answer basic questions.
Oh.
And when they couldn't answer basic questions, he dressed this person down harshly, and I stood there, and it was very fucking awkward.
Well, yeah, what I found interesting about the thing is Sipowitz is clearly more upset that the guy's lying about being in Nam than he is about cheating people out of money with a fake leg.
Yes, that was their argument. They didn't deserve to take people's money using the veteran route because they didn't serve and earn it.
Anyway, we're at the beginning of this episode, so this is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, go through every single episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue, and this is the theme song to NYPD Blue. All right, do you just want to burn through the Tanya story, just so we can argue about it?
No. I think we should burn through
Metaboy Martinez.
Metaboy Martinez. I think we could burn through. Like, we could literally just say this: two brothers come in. They're a bunch of fucking dum dums. They leave. They go beat up the dude that their brother picked up, and then we come to find out the older brother did it because he's a pussy. Boom. Moving on.
Okay. You know what? I'll give a little nuance. Just a little nuance to what you said.
Brother got his feelings hurt because, you know, he couldn't take a little throw up. So,
yeah,
he decided to murder his brother.
It's kind of a bummer that this is the case that gets the title of the episode when it's the first episode that John shows up and is a part of the squad now.
Yeah, and it's the first episode that sets up, like, a continuous story, which, like, they don't do that often, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was actually thinking about this when I was watching this episode. Like, you know, it got me excited because of, I'm not to spoil, but it does set up a story.
Uh-huh.
It's going to set up a multiple episode thing. I get excited because it's like, I like when they have these long stories.
Mm-hmm.
Like when Andy shot to help Bobby and shot that mob guy. And then they have the story run into the next season. Like, those are interesting. It's better than these one-off things that just happen. So it got me excited for what was going to happen.
It's also, it felt like the Metavoy Martinez story was like the story that's just tacked on to give him something to do, but it got the title and the beginning of the episode, which is so weird.
Like, it doesn't feel important.
No, not at all.
We don't learn anything from, like, Metavoy and Martinez don't really do anything, or we don't learn anything really from them. Like, it just doesn't seem like it was necessary to include. I don't know.
Well, just to add the little nuance I was talking about, because you are correct. The two brothers come in to get told that their brother died. The older brother, Gerald, is, like, browbeating John because John's having fucking emotions about his brother dying.
Crazy, yeah.
And, like, all that reveals is he had, their younger brother, Frank, had a fair to go to LaGuardia, and that was it this morning. So the brothers then go on their own mission to find who that guy was, and they beat the fuck out of him. And the only reason I want to bring this up is because when they bring that guy in, he's bloody, he's fucked up, and he's sick, too. And they're like, hey, but, like, their brother died?
Yeah.
And he's like,
hey, we know, like, you paid for a service, ended up not going on your ship because you feel like shit, and then got the fuck beat out of you. But could you be cool about it?
And then he's like, yeah, they beat me for no reason. They're like, yeah, their brother died. And he's like, they made fun of my jacket. And I was like, okay, that's a weird poll that they made. <That's>...
he gets even weirder with it because he goes, please tell me they didn't beat me because of my lip rings.
After he finds out why they beat him up, which is so dumb. Yeah.
He goes, are you sure they... And he says something along the lines like, are you sure they didn't beat me because of my lip rings?
Like, yeah.
Some weird-ass shit.
They bring the brothers back in because they, you know, assaulted a dude. And the younger one, John, is like...
This time they were able to separate them, which they didn't do at the beginning. Because they weren't suspects.
And so when they separate them, they get John, and he's like, yeah, they fight all the time. And Gerald's really particular. He basically has OCD. He's kind of an asshole about it. And he's like, well, did they fight this morning? And then John basically is like, yeah, he killed him. Like, he gets so, like, emotional and sad. It's like, it felt weird this morning. So then they bring in Gerald, and the only thing that I will say about it is Metavoy does use some detectiving in a decent interview style to get this dude to confess what happened. That's, like, the only interesting thing. He uses...
Yeah, Metavoy is actually I like Metavoy. What Metavoy does this episode?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like maybe that's what they were trying to do. Is they were trying to show Metavoy in a different light. I don't know, but I really like the way Metavoy.
Because yeah, he was like, oh, so you like things a particular way? You like to keep your house in order, and you just wish other people would. And then sometimes they don't, and you get angry. And sometimes, like, he basically walks him into saying, like, yeah, I accidentally shot my brother and freaked out and didn't know what to do. So that's really the end of that one. It's very quick. It sucks that it's the title. What's up, Chuck? That's kind of a bummer. So do you want to do Tanya now, or do you want to do that at the end? I feel like we should do Tanya now.
Let's do Tanya now. Yeah, let's do Tanya okay. now, because the next story is the more important story.
It's the big one.
It's the white whale, as they would say.
Sipowicz is involved slightly because he's downstairs checking the prosthesis in as evidence, I guess. When
No, he's probably just putting it at the desk because he told the guy if he wanted it back, he'd have to walk into the station and get it. So he's probably like checking it and then telling them like, hey, like this guy's probably going to come in, blah blah blah.
While he's there, Tanya's family bring in AJ and are shouting he's a murderer, and said that he claims he had sex and murdered their Tanya, to which he said, yeah. I only dreamed that I had sex and killed her.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, there's a lot of weird shit going on here.
And then Sipowicz, like, calms him down by saying, we got him now, we got it. We, like, he's in our custody, so we're gonna take care of it.
I find that shit so funny because, like, if that was Sipowicz's daughter and, like, Sipowicz was able to get a hold of the guy who mm-hmm. supposedly, like, raped and murdered his daughter, he wouldn't be so calm about it.
No, he would not. Also, it's the gentleman freaking out is her uncle, I think? I think he says my niece, Tanya.
Cause okay, her, niece. Her... Even, still, I mean, I yeah. don't know. I still think niece or daughter, I still think Sipowicz would be kosher with it.
No, he wouldn't be cool. AJ gets brought into a room with Russell and Kirkendall, and they ask him to describe his dream, because maybe he's one of those guys who only dreams about the horrible things he does. And he talks about having sex with her on a beach in a dream, but then there's also carpet, and she wanted to go someplace warm. And they were, like, trying to get it out of him. And he's like, look, my head's fuzzy. I take anti-seizure medication. And that's why the city doesn't want to give me that money, because I have a previous condition.
Well, okay, what's his condition? See, we don't ever find that out.
No, he says. He says he has a tumor growing in his brain.
Oh, that's right. A benign tumor.
So it gives him seizures, and that's why they won't give him money for whatever accident. They're like, well, where did she end up? And then he gives them, like, an exact location in a basement somewhere. Because it's warm. So...
Well, no, because he sells the basement, and he gives them the basement, and then says this because he used to work there, right?
Yeah, he used to work there, and he knew it was warm because of a boiler.
Warm like Jamaica.
So they go to that basement. The next time we see Russell and Kirkendall, they go into Fancy's office, and they say, there's no girl in the basement, but there is her earring. So
yeah, weird.
So Fancy says, which line that I love, probably he ought to know that we're losing patience.
Uh-huh. Yeah, this is a very weird Fancy. Interaction right here. Yeah.
So they go at him again, and Russell's going hard, and Kirkendall is going,
you know how she's serious? Slap the fucking table, bro.
She's slapping a table. She slapped that table. But not only that, she slapped the table and then threw away his juice, and he said, hey, I liked that juice.
And then, yeah, loved it. Great little subtle nuance. This is what makes me think, okay, keep going. Are you going to describe this part right here?
Because yes.
This is where, this is a good solid portion of what makes me think he is special.
They show him the earring, and they go, did you actually take her there, or is this a part of something? And he goes, she lost her earring? Russell says that his head is not in the real world, we don't care about what's in your head right now.
So they keep going at him, like, they're drilling him hard, and they basically get him to admit that he put her in a dumpster?
Yeah, he also says, like, yeah, they're like, well, is the sex real? And he goes, yeah, I had sex with her. And then he describes the story where she like looked at him seductively, and he was like, "Yeah, she's a teenager." And then he just said straight up, "Hey, she got me.
Yeah,
she got
me." It's a gross scene, but he does it so well.
Then he murdered her because she was getting too sexual.
Well, she started complaining. No, she started complaining too, right? And she started like getting weird. I think.
He said that she was getting more sexual and that wasn't right, and then he covered her nose and mouth to suffocate her, and then threw her into a dumpster, and then he said, "Aren't I despicable? I don't even deserve that juice."
That's what makes me think he's special.
Well, no, and this is what leads...
No, because it, mentally he's a certain age.
Okay, regardless.
And like... So mentally, he's a certain age.
Okay, regardless, let me continue. So they go out, they come back, and they say, "We look through 20 dumpsters, she's not in it, and none of the trash departments are clearing that day." And Fancy just goes, "Do you want me to stick Andy on this guy?" Which is basically, like, "Do you want Andy to beat his ass?" Which I was fine. I was like, that's bold.
He's just totally, he's totally at the point where he's like, "Let's just beat the fuck out of people. I'll move on, please."
And they say, "Look, we're bringing in a videotape for a confession. Maybe he's just waiting to build up to what actually happened." And then Fancy's just annoyed, and Kirkendall's like, he might just want to sing his favorite karaoke tunes. And Fancy's like, "If he starts singing anything, we're going to give him a tune-up." So it's like, we're just going to beat this guy's ass. Like, he just says it out loud.
It's like, geez, Fancy, take a joke, dude.
So they cut to him. He's giving his confession where he openly admits to being a rapist and a killer, says that he choked her now, not just covered her mouth and nose, and then he wrapped her up and dumped her in the river by the Fulton Fish Market. And he smiles at the end after saying, "I'll take whatever punishment you have for a dangerous person like me." Russell and Kirkendall leave the room. Sandra, Tanya's mother, brings up a girl and says, "Hey, you know who this is? It's Tanya. She was out skiing with her dad." And they're like, "Okay, well, we need to talk to you for a minute, Sandra." They pull Sandra aside and they're like, "Hey, he admitted to raping and murdering your daughter." And she goes, "What do you want me to do?" And I was like, "It's still a problem. Hey, it's still a problem. Hey, that's still a big problem."
Doesn't she say something like, "You need to get him in fucking therapy"?
Yeah, immediately.
Yeah.
And they're like, "Well, are you going to get him help?" And she's like, "I guess I will." And that's when I was like, who is AJ to her? Is it like her brother? Or like... What is he?
Yeah, they don't really define who. No, they say that's your niece.
They say it's the other dude's niece, the guy that came in freaking out. I don't know if she's anything to AJ at all.
Well, no, that's a good point. That's great. No, that's a great point. Like, what is AJ to this group?
So they go to get him.
He has to be related to somebody. He's gotta be that woman's kid.
That doesn't make sense either, because he's old.
The talk they have at the end, though, she looked, I mean, I think he's supposed to be playing, like, 22,
23. Okay.
And maybe. she looks old enough to have a kid, to have someone that looks like Terrence Howard at that age.
But the part that even confounds me more is... They go and get him, and they're like, "Hey, by the way, Sandra's here with Tanya." And he goes, "Oh, what?" And he goes out to see them, and Tanya's like, "Look at this dumbass." And he's like, "Yeah, this dumbass with my stanky feet. You're just waiting for that chick, too." And I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? It seems like this big ploy for attention on all parts, and... The thing that bothers me, that made me go, this is a problem, the dude has admitted that to raping and murdering this girl a bunch, and no one is doing anything. Like, that's when you go, "Hey, guess where you're going? A home! You're not going to be in the same home where this person is."
Oh, you mean as the girl that you just said you raped and murdered that we're bringing back to?
Yeah, exactly. No, that's a big no. That's a big no, thank you. We're not doing that. He's not going to your home.
Okay, Kirk, I'm not arguing with you that's a problem. That was never my argument.
You're saying that he's so special it should be moot at this point?
No. I'm saying that he has a developmental issue.
Yeah, no shit.
I'm saying that he's stuck at a certain whatever. I'm trying not to say anything.
Maturity. He's stuck at
He's stuck at a certain maturity, and it was a cry for attention. But I think it's because when he sits at home all day and they call him lazy and garbage and shit, maybe he like started to feel that way and he saw that. I don't know, like the juice thing for me, 100%, because he has like a mental breakdown and starts crying, and then he's like, "I'm not good enough for juice." Like that's something like a little fucking kid says when you get him in trouble.
Okay, I don't disagree that there's a developmental issue. However, very unlike the episode where they had the kid with Down syndrome, and they were like, oh my god, are they going to pretend like this kid's a rapist? And then it turns out, no, it's the mom being a total bitch. Yeah. This guy sat in a room and three different ways said, oh yeah, I definitely had sex with her and killed her, and her voice is sexy when she's screaming. That's when you go, hey, he's not going home with you. You're going to put him in a home. No. You're going to put him somewhere. Like, this is not happening.
I'm not disagreeing with that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not disagreeing with that at all. I don't think he should be going home to live with this girl after admitting three different times in three different ways how he would, like, kill and sleep with this person. I'm 100%. I am on board. I am team, not him going home. But I also think what's leading to the way he's thinking and acting is he has some developmental things he needs to deal with.
You know what? I'm on hashtag team no juice. That's where I'm at right now. Hashtag team no juice.
I'm on hashtag doesn't deserve juice.
All right, so the main story of this that should have been the title, that's basically all anybody cares about.
The title have been?
What's up, John? Or, do you want to come down, John? Or, basically, whatever they said to John to ask if he wants to work here. I'm sure they didn't realize he'd be as important a character as he would become, but the fact that his first episode being the new PAA, and will be the PAA, I think for the rest of the show, if I remember correctly, is this shitty titled episode.
I think he's the longest running one, yeah.
So it opens up, I mean, spoiler alert, you should have watched the episode before you started this podcast, but it involves John getting Dolores' job. Sipowicz is still pissed off about the Nom thing. He's putting trash in that dude's leg, I guess, or just paperwork. And John comes in, and he is very kind of weird and skittish, but he sits down with the detectives.
He came in very awkward, right? Like,
yeah.
He knows both of them. He knows Andy pretty well. But he came in really fucking awkward.
He's also very scared because of what's happening.
True. I guess.
He says, 2 weeks ago, Dolores went to Atlantic City doing a little hooking. And her...
This is where one of my favorite... When I first was watching it, the line made me laugh out loud.
I didn't write any lines down, so you're going to have to fill me in. Dolores told John the client's name, which John makes John think that she thought something would happen. His name was Malcolm Cullinan, and he's some rich fuck who gives a bunch of money.
From the Cullinan wing.
Yeah.
That annoys Andy.
Because those crazy art people.
No, he goes, the Cullinan wing? And John explains like how they're huge donors to the art community or whatever.
And then John says, after 11 days of trying to contact him, I wrote him a letter that's basically blackmail, saying I'll publicize this if you don't get back to me.
Yeah.
And then James Sinclair is the one who contacted him, and we know who James Sinclair is. If you've been watching NYPD Blue since the beginning, you know who James Sinclair is. He's one of the best recurring characters in this show. Once his name
for a while.
And once his name gets brought up, Sipowicz just straight up says out loud, "She's dead."
Yeah, that's the funniest part. because then the whole rest of the conversation is every single one of them basically trying to like walk it back, and there's no way to walk it back. Because it's like, as soon as Sipowicz says it, it's basically like gold.
And
when it comes to that room, and it's over with. Like, like that's why it's super funny.
Well,
he can't even like for one second like hold it, like not be Sipowicz.
And the best is how, like, because I mean, obviously, if you watch Sipowicz, you know how he would say it. John goes, "I got contacted by a James Sinclair who said he'd be here to talk to me." And Sipowicz, like, in like a gruff exhale, is just like, "She's dead." Like, it's just repeating what he said, but it's like, he is so exasperated by the news that it's James Sinclair that, and it's the truth, but then when John's like, "Well, what does that mean?" I think, what's his name? Danny is the one that's like, "Well, it doesn't necessarily mean she's dead, but something bad definitely happened."
Yeah, they all tried. Fucking Lieutenant Fancy says something, Martinez says something. They all try to say, like, so, then like, the icing on the cake is fucking Fancy's just like, "Do you want to sit at the chair? Like, do you want to work down here? Like, I know you're going through something. Like, why don't you just work here so you don't have to go up there?"
And so that we'll be here when he comes in. Sipowicz tries to deflect by doing two jokes. One is an OJ joke, timeless. And then he jokes that...
nailed it.
And then he jokes, "Do you know what this Sinclair looks like?" And he's like, "No, I've never met him." But he's like, "If you see anybody that looks like a hairless rat, introduce yourself." And sure enough, Sinclair walks in, and John stands up right away and says, "Mr. Sinclair." And Sinclair basically is like, "Hey, we're going to deal with what you talked about, and if you try anything further, I'm coming for your ass." But like in lawyer speak.
Yeah, he's no nonsense from the get-go, and John starts shitting himself.
One thing that I did like that I forgot to mention about the scene before this, Sipowicz, when John takes a call, leans into Danny and is like, "If he comes himself, something bad has happened to this girl." And it was like, oh, shit. So when Sinclair shows up, you're like, she's fucking dead.
100%. It was the funniest line in the episode to me.
And then Sinclair sees Sipowicz and says, basically, "I don't bet, but I would give you any odds on the idea that you wouldn't be alive at this point." Because Sinclair saw him at his worst.
Well, that's the last time. I think the last time they really interacted with each other was when Andy was real bad.
He asks if there's a chat, if there's a riding district attorney. And sure enough, Cohen was coming up the stairs. So they go into a private room. And when they do, Sinclair lays out that his client went to Atlantic City with a prostitute. Sipowicz gets upset, saying, "Don't call her a prostitute. She worked here." Also, just
did he call her a prostitute? I thought he called her something harsher than that.
Oh, he does later. Because he calls her a prostitute, and he's like, "I'll call her a princess. What do you want me to call her?" And he's like, "Don't disrespect her. She worked in this house." Then Sipowicz kind of makes a motion to Danny to sit, which was kind of funny. Like, he's a child.
Yeah, well, Danny has some weird energy for the Sinclair guy for never meeting him. For, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And then Sinclair's like, "My client not being a drug user doesn't understand the subculture," and Sorensen calls him an asshole. Sinclair says, and Sinclair says, "Take your advice from your partner here and behave yourself." And he says, "By the way, my client likes to film when he fucks prostitutes." And on the film, you'll see that Dolores Mayo OD'd, and she died on film. And Sipowicz is like, "Did he try to help her?" And Sinclair responds like, "Do you try to help junkies in Thompson Square Park?" And then Sipowicz screams at him.
Fair question.
And then Sipowicz screams at him, "Don't call her a junkie or a prostitute, not in this house." He then says, "My client panicked and worried about his wife and children, buried her in the middle of Jersey, I guess." Danny gets on him saying, "Not because it's in his name, not because of how it would look." And Sinclair says, "Look, here's the deal. Full statement, copy of the video. It comes down to a misdemeanor, which is just a fine and probation." And Cohen is like, I have to talk to my boss about it. And Sipowicz is like, let's get out of here. We know what he's going to say, this shitty lawyer with his lawyering.
Yeah, Sipowicz gets so mad at them for having to do their job. Like, it's sad.
I also laughed because it looks like they brought their briefcases onto the table at the same time.
Yeah.
Which was hilarious.
Yeah, like in unison.
Which was pretty funny. After that, Fancy, Sipowicz, and Sorensen talk about how they're going to tell John in the coffee room. He guesses before they even say a word. They mention that she OD'd, and John was like, do you believe him? To Sipowicz, basically like, you're the most respected one, do you believe him? And he said, well, apparently there's a tape, and John's like, well, I want to see that tape. Sipowicz almost gets himself into a little bit of a...
kerfuffle?
What's the word? PC. He gets himself into a little bit of a PC jam, because he says...
A PC principal jam?
Yeah, because he says... It's no good for a person like you to watch that tape. And yeah. John's like, what do you mean a person like me? He's like, a civilian. I mean a civilian. Not because you're gay. It's because you're a civilian.
It's not because you're gay and a bitch.
Well, we find out that
that's basically what he wants to say. And then he has a breakdown and starts crying.
I don't think that Sipowicz meant it that way at all. I don't think he was saying it's because he's gay. I think he was saying it because he's like, it's not something you need to see if it's accurate. I don't think he was saying because you're gay.
That's fair enough. Like, I don't think anyone wants to see their friend OD on tape. That's a fair enough assessment.
But I did think that him freaking out that it may have seemed like that was the reason, when John pushes it further, Fancy is just like, you can watch with me in the observation room. Another scene that's kind of momentous for this episode that's very subtle. The next scene, Sipowicz gives the backstory about Sinclair to Danny.
Yeah. About how they know each other.
He made him look like
and why they're so snarky towards each other.
He said he made him look like a monkey on the witness stand. But it doesn't help because he was drinking or drunk at the time.
He owns up to it.
John comes in to say they'll be in 20 minutes. Sipowicz makes a comment, this is why we keep lawyers away from perps, which is kind of awkward. Then Sipowicz tells Sorensen, why don't you write your name on that locker, you're using it. And they show the locker, and you could see him cross out Simone's name to put his own. And you can also see Kelly's name crossed out on it, too.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like a, oh shit, Simone is 100% gone. It was kind of like a, I know he's gone, but to have Silver Spoons do that on tape was kind of not cool.
Silver Spoons.
Next time we have these characters, the room is filled with Sipowicz, Sorensen, Kalanen, who is the perp, Cohen, and
this is a real fucking watch party, dude.
Yeah, there's a lot of people watching this tape.
And did you notice that, like, they're all white men except for Fancy?
I notice now. It's pretty shitty video where he's filming this Dolores who's walking around, and she's cooking up her heroin, and he makes a comment, how many guys do you wish were here right now? And then Sipowicz, because they're trying to get him upset to get him to admit to, like, something, because that's their
point. Like an outburst or something, yeah.
So he makes a, and I'm quoting, he makes a comment about this guy being half a fag, which is a pejorative, terrible term for homosexuals.
It's a terrible term, but it's a great word.
Or a great way to describe Harley riders, according to South Park. They also make a comment about him polishing up his little soldier, and Sinclair puts the kibosh on it, saying, we'll leave if that continues.
Oh, he shuts that shit down.
Cohen makes a play saying this could be considered conspiracy to murder by saying that he paid to watch her kill herself. Kalanen takes a crack at Sipowicz for not making enough money, and Sinclair then stops Kalanen and gives him a look like, motherfucker, you're paying me to get you out of this shit.
Yeah, I guarantee you before they walked in, Sinclair looked at him and was like, just don't fucking talk.
Don't say a damn word. I got it covered. We'll be fine. Don't fucking talk. So the second he said something, he was like...
You killed this whore. Shut up. I'm going to take care of it, but don't say a fucking word.
You want to know why you're paying me six figures for two meetings? You're paying me six figures for two meetings because I'm going to get you off a murder charge. So shut the fuck up. When they stop the tape, what's his name? Sinclair mentions that he used the phrase pay for your high was not an admission of guilt for her high. He just inferring that that's what she did with the money he paid her for sex.
Sure, dude.
She passes out, and you can hear him on the tape being like, don't pass out. Aww.
Oh, dude. This dude has such a great whiny voice.
Yeah, it's pretty intense.
I fucking love it.
Sipowicz points at him and says, you're a murderer. And then all of a sudden, John bursts in and is like, she is right. You're going to hell. And Cullinan says, aw, can you handle Tinkerbell? And then John straight punches him in the face.
Take this, Tinkerbell, bitch.
And then Sipowicz covers with, like, yeah, press charges, so we have to let out what happened here. Sinclair's like, he will not be pressing charges, which is pretty awesome to just be like, yeah, he ain't gonna do shit. Don't worry about that.
No, but I bet you Sinclair loved him, too. I bet she's like, that's what you get, bitch. Keep fucking talking.
Keep being an asshole.
Keep talking and being an asshole. Like, we could have walked in, showed this, walked out, been done, but you kept running your fucking mouth. He's a good sleazy guy.
I wrote it down. His name is Daniel Benzelli? Benzali?
Danielson.
He was also in, I didn't realize this, he was in one of the worst 007 movies, A View to a Kill. So that's on his known for, which is really sad for that guy, because that movie is horrible.
Yeah, bummer for him, dude. That sucks.
Because he is, like, he makes his character on this show is awesome, and the fact that it lasts so many episodes and pops in randomly is really cool. It's kind of a bummer that that's his known for. I feel like NYPD Blue should be up there first, but... Oh, the end of the episode, the last scene of the episode, John is at the desk, and he's clearly, you know, not feeling too great, and nobody really knows who should try and comfort him. Like, everybody's kind of looking at each other and doing the, like, well, who's going to do it? Sipowicz tries to give, like, a sorry about what happened, and then John, like, bursts into tears and starts sobbing. I wrote, the men in the room man it up, and they kind of do this, like, well, I mean, I don't know what to do here. I mean, most of the time, dudes just, you know, shake it off and then go, like, hit a tire or a wall. And then Sipowicz and Sorensen go back and forth, like, well, who's going to fucking talk to him? And then out of nowhere, Martinez goes in with his story about his brother. And I wrote, here is Totoro going for his Emmy, talking about what happened to his brother way back in, I think, season one or two.
For sure.
Because his brother died.
He was trying so hard.
He was trying to get that MA. He's like, he tells it's a pretty touching story about how his brother died of an overdose. He only remembered, like, oh my gosh, I didn't do enough, all the bad things that happened that I could have prevented. But then after a couple of years, he had a positive memory and realized that's the first time he thought of him in a way without thinking about the bad stuff and how eventually that will happen. And then John mentions, like, yeah, we used to dance in the clubs. And then Kirkendall's like, I saw her ballet show and she was a beautiful dancer. That made me think, is Kirkendall just saying that? For all we know, Dolores was garbage.
Well, no, they had that bonding moment.
Yeah, but, I mean...
They had that bonding moment where she was, like, doing all that shit. And then Kirkendall's like, if I could flex like her, my husband would have stayed or something like that.
But yeah, I think she just said, hey, she's a good dancer. But in reality, she's like... whatever.
Damn, you're going after the sincerity of Kirkendall? Jesus, we're just attacking her, okay.
This is the same woman that has kids to go home to, but always finds time to not go home to them.
And she's like the original duck face, or duck lips, or whatever.
And then Fancy, it's pretty cool how Fancy does this. He's like, look, I never replaced her. And he goes, yeah, I appreciate that you gave her so many chances. And he's like, do you want anti-crime to put in for one? And you just come down here? And he's like, I'd like that very much. He's like, okay, start here tomorrow. And then everybody says goodbye to him. And at that point, I was like, yes! John is in the building! It took way too fucking long to get here.
Yeah, but can Fancy just do that?
Apparently Fancy's just like, hey, just like, I got your PAA.
Just take whatever the fuck he wants and bounce.
I just love the idea that he calls up Anti-Crime tomorrow. He's like, hey, so you gotta put in for a PAA, and they're just like, what? Yeah, we took yours.
Like, why? Why do we have to... Wait, what? Why? Like, we really like John. We don't want him to leave.
It's like, yeah, it sucks to be you. He's going to be giving us our messages now. Go find another one. You get a Dolores or a... what's that woman's name that turned out to be like a fetishist?
Jerry.
Jerry. Go get a... all the ones.
Jerry with the G-E-R-I. Jerry spelled G-E-R-I. We know that for a fact.
So yeah, that's the end of the episode, and I'm very happy that John is now in the hot seat, and John is going to be the PAA for a while, and I think for the rest of the show, because I love John. I like when he's on the show, so I'm glad that he's now around, period.
Oh yeah, for sure. I'm excited that he's back.
Anything else about this episode before we call it off, besides the fact that because Terrence Howard's character is mentally handicapped, he's allowed to have fantasies about raping underage girls? Go ahead.
I never said he was allowed. That was never my argument.
Look, how...
That's never what we were talking about. No one's allowed to have those thoughts. Well, wait,
now we're talking
super thought slope, I guess.
Now we're talking thought
now
crime.
We're talking Minority Report, yeah.
No, I'm trying.
I don't have Tom Cruise in my brain. No, he has a learning disability, 100%. But like, it doesn't excuse the rape and murder fantasy dreams. And
yeah,
someone needs to figure that shit out. Should maybe that should be like a fucking red flag, you know?
I also do not understand the reaction, because I don't have any children. If
you don't?
Yeah, not that I know of. If I had a daughter, and for whatever reason you were living with me, maybe we had a house together or whatever, and the daughter was missing, she turned up, and then the police officer told me, your brother just admitted to raping and killing her. My first thought isn't, well, what do you want me to do about it? That was her response. What am I supposed to do? And it's don't let him in your house. The fact that her response was like, well, geez, I guess this is my responsibility. It's like, what are you doing?
No, dude, literally once they tell that mom or that whoever that lady is to Terrence Howard, once they, she comes in and is like, oh, I found my daughter, they're like, oh, okay, cool, well, he still had all these weird dreams. And she's like, yeah, cool, but I found my daughter, so we're good.
Yeah. I was confounded by that scene. Because then it was like, tell me you want me to come home with my stanky feet. And I'm like, what's the problem? What's happening here? You want to...
He is like a young child who has been ignored and made fun of. He's fine. He was acting out because he has never felt love, Kirk.
Okay, Kyle. Okay.
Whatever, dude.
Whatever. I mean, we disagree on we disagree on the severity of the scene, I think. I think it's like, he needs to be... Brendan, you need to be medicated. No, it just something needs to happen to this dude.
Oh, no, Kirk, you're not listening. I agree with you,
but you're the way you're painting it is like, oh, but it's not that big a deal. It's a huge problem.
No, it's a huge deal. It's a huge problem, and at any point, something bad could happen. I totally agree with you on that.
Mm-hmm.
But he also has a learning condition.
Okay. All right.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
I'm not saying it excuses anything. He still needs, the help he needs to get.
Anyway, John's back. That's all that matters. And,
he definitely needs help, Kirk. I'm with you on that. He definitely needs help.
Every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AsherBrothersPodcast.com, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, where you find a podcast. We're on Instagram at AsherBrothersPodcast. We're on Twitter at AsherBrosPod, mostly mentioning when new episodes are coming out. And that's it. Have a good one. Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. If you have a moment, please rate and review the show on whatever platform you're using to listen to it. It's how people see it in the algorithm, and hopefully end up watching the best show ever, NYPD Blue. It's currently on Hulu.
But it's important to note that special episodes that are over about an hour are cut down for syndication, so you're not getting the full episodes on Hulu, and NYPD Blue is currently not available on Amazon. Even if you purchased it, it's real nonsense. Anyway, if you have a desire for more NYPD Blue information, there's a couple of books out there. True Blue, written about the first couple seasons by creators and consultants. There is What Would Sipowicz Do? A collection of articles about the show. And then there's Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue. It's on Amazon for 99 cents. Thanks again for listening. I truly appreciate it. And just to give you a little tease, with the Binging with Ben episodes, he has watched and we have recorded the first 5 episodes of Season 6, which is the ending of a very prominent and popular character. It's a great episode. Can't wait to bring it to you. Wear a mask. Get vaccinated. Social distance. Have a good one.